I could pretend to be Emma, but I think rather than attempt to give her fantastic talk, I'll stick with my own. So thank you so much for having me here tonight. As a fellow of the Geological Society, it's absolutely brilliant to be hosting an event such as this here. Once upon a time, I was on council here at the Geological Society. I served my time. I don't know, maybe I have to come back again at some point. So with regards to the exam question that we have been set for this evening, so critical minerals, how can science and technology help to deliver the UK strategy? Well, I was really, really glad that I was number three on the lineup tonight, because I have to confess that when I looked at it, I thought, which strategy to start with? And thank you very much, Paul, for giving us that outline. As a member of that expert committee group that Paul said was really, really good, so thank you, Paul. Consider our arms well and truly twisted for later on. Of course, as you can see, this is something that is evolving. We had the first ever critical minerals strategy here in the UK only in 2021. And that was after the likes of COP26, so the big climate change summit that was held in Glasgow. It had been, of course, delayed by a year because there was something in 2020. I don't know. Anyone remember? I don't know. We all got to spend lots of time at home. But that was something where back in 2021, the connection between the wonderful world of rocks, minerals, metals, and all of that technology that is needed for the energy transition hadn't quite been made. At least it certainly hadn't been made here in the UK. There was one country in the world who certainly had made that connection. Does anybody know which country that was? Yes, it was indeed. It was China. And so one of the reasons why China has such a big pie, not just lots of segments within that pie, is because China was incredibly clever and put together its minerals strategy over 40 years ago, and they've done a fabulous job of enacting it. So what this means is, of course, as the rest of the world catches up, we've got a little bit of a decision to make. Do we play catch up with regards to that game? Or do we change the game itself? And I think this is part of the aspect that really science and technology and innovation and research and development, et cetera, can bring to the table. From a personal perspective, when I was first invited to stand up here and give this talk, my name was Dr. Sarah Gordon, and I ran a company, and I still do run a company called Satala, which is a risk management and sustainability consultancy. So I could stand here and give us all a lecture on risk management. No? Anyone? Sorry, Gavin, just you. Okay. Or I could stand up here and talk about rocks. Okay, I'm going to do that one more time. Or I could stand up here and talk about rocks. Excellent. Well, I'm going to burst that bubble slightly because, of course, this is a discussion around both risk and rocks. See the alliteration there? It works quite well, doesn't it? Now, Gavin took us through a fantastic overview of the critical minerals assessment, effectively. So, what is critical with regards to what we need in the UK right now? So this is a pit of excitement that you can get stuck into. You can go and have conversations with people from around the world, and they will have arguments over whether their particular material is critical or not. And these are discussions that I invite you to go and speak to Gavin about, because they are scintillating with regards to what people are talking about there. But what Gavin, I'm sure, will say very quickly is it's not really about the past. What we're talking about is the future. So that's where these foresight studies, et cetera, really come into being. And the future is the exciting place that we can begin to think about, because that's where, if we say, okay, we understand what this game is, and the game is that we need lots of stuff to be able to live in the future, be it in terms of that energy transition technology, all the way through to things like ventilators. Actually, we are having to make decisions now as to where those materials go. They could all pile into batteries and wind turbines, or they could go into other things as well. So one of the reasons why things are critical is because we need loads of different bits of kit all around us. So the game is that we need lots of stuff. And also, just to really point at the elephant in the room, we don't really want to mine anything unless we absolutely have to. Most people, and I say this as somebody who has lived and worked on many mine sites around the world, because I started out life as an exploration geologist and then I lived and worked on site. So I have been there, I have seen it, I've done it. Most people don't think that mining is a very good thing. And that's in part because they don't necessarily understand what is going on within that mining. I can feel the glares coming at me now. But I think this is a case, especially when we get into our discussion later on, it is a point that we need to be able to discuss. So in terms of the game, what can we change and what can't we change? So in terms of thinking about the future and those critical minerals that we need, there's really only one thing that we can't change, and those are the rocks. So the most important people in this room are the geologists. Get in. I can say that, can't I, Simon? Excellent. Okay, so what we cannot change are the rocks. We can change our understanding of them, our interpretation of the data sets, etc., but the rocks are the rocks. And as far as I'm aware, no matter who you pray to or what dance you do, the rocks do not change. I'm looking at Dan, he's there with his arms folded. He's thinking, well, maybe Sarah, if you think hard enough about it. So this is something here where we cannot change the rocks on the ground, but we can change to start with, what do we actually need? And this is where Paul Gavin's assessment begins to crumble, because we begin to say, no, we don't need to make batteries out of that array of different materials. We could change what we put into them. And actually, we've got precedent for doing that. Things like platinum. So as Gavin said, when we saw things like Marikana occur back in 2011, people were worried about the price of platinum. Well, actually, Johnson Matthey's been doing an amazing job of working in that space, because what we've been doing is building a really great catalytic converter that means we don't have so many nasty emissions going out into the atmosphere, out the back of combustion engines. And we usually make them using loads of precious bits to start with. And then we go, whoa, that's a bit expensive. So we thrift it away. So we develop a piece of technology and then we improve it. And part of that improvement is by changing the mix of materials that we actually need to make it. So we can change the materials that we need for the future. We can substitute, and John and Gavin was already talking about some of that. In terms of recycling, at the moment, lots of what we call recycling is actually downcycling. So what we do is we take things like a car, we strip it, and we chuck it into the world of steel. Now, Dan, I'm going to keep pulling you out on this. Dan and I were sitting side by side at an event at the Institute of Physics a number of years ago, and we both almost fell off our seats because we found out that the chemical composition of the worst type of steel, i.e., rebar, contained 0.42% nickel and 0.31% copper. You pretty much open a brand new mine for 0.31% copper, and yet we're there throwing it into rebar. That's criminal. From a geologist's perspective, how dare we not respect the copper, etc., that we're just throwing away into that steel? Now, why do we do it? We do it because the steel industry, the scrap industry, survives on volume. So they don't have time to slow down and work out how do we strip things out in a better way. So here we have this conundrum of science and metallurgy, but also economics and market forces all clashing together to say, how do we revolutionize some of this? How do we change the game with regards to how we do it? We can, of course, change our behavior, but trying to persuade somebody to use less electricity is quite a tall order, especially when the entire world is trying to move forwards and develop. So how do we do this? How do we make these changes? Well, the answers sit with all of us here in this room. It's our expertise, it's our imagination, our creativity, but also our willingness to challenge one another. In this room, I'm sure we have people from all kinds of different disciplines. And the real magic happens when we get stretched and we're in that uncomfortable zone where we go, huh, I hadn't thought about that before, but that's a really good idea. How do we try and capitalize on that particular idea? And where do those ideas often happen? They often happen on the fringes or the intersections of be it our sciences or our disciplines. And that is something that is very much core to the Rio Tinto Centre for Future Materials, which is, of course, my most recent addition to my personal portfolio of jobs. I'm still doing all of the other stuff, but it's okay. We're creating more hours in the day. It's glorious. So the Rio Tinto Centre for Future Materials really thrives on that transdisciplinary nature of bringing together social scientists, physical scientists, economists, etc., you name it. In fact, it's almost like the research equivalent of that fantastic committee that Paul articulated or described earlier on. And what's really exciting is once you begin to be able to speak a language that everybody can go, oh, I kind of understand what you're saying. Once we create that environment in which people feel comfortable enough to say, I think I'm asking you a bit of a silly question, but what does this mean? What about this? What about that? How do we find those step change areas of science and innovation? That is at the core of what we're doing. Now, this is only enabled by an incredibly generous gift of some cash from Rio Tinto to Imperial College. So this is a centre that is funded to the tune of 150 million over the next 10 years. That therefore allows us to take really big risks to say, well, what if we changed the way in which we utilize these materials? Or what if we totally changed the chemistry of that battery or whatever the case might be? What if we changed the way in which we extracted those materials out of the ground so we didn't necessarily need to dig a hole? It would make the miners really unhappy, but it would make the environmentalists and the social scientists very happy indeed. So we're allowed to answer all of these fantastic questions. So it's with that that I think in terms of our exam question, critical minerals, how can science and technology help to deliver the UK strategy? It's about reinventing the game and saying, okay, fine, the mineral flows, the material flows at the moment are locked up, but how do we change what we need for the future? Thank you very much.